Hijacked, A Beechwood Adventure by G. Michael Smith. Chapter 25. Plans to Go It Alone. Billy slept in. Dreams of fame and riches filled his head. They seemed to be exciting at the start, but all too soon became complicated. That was the best word he could find to express the pattern of his dreams. The complicated part started when the dream story could not decide which path to take. It would follow a storyline that filled with possibilities, too many possibilities, most of which were not pleasant. Once the dream became complicated, he would abandon it and start over. Lies and half-truths were usually the problem. He would find gold ingots and get his name in the paper. He would get interviewed on the TV news. He would get phone calls from Ellen and Oprah. If someone asked him a question that he had previously lied about, he would feel ill. If that happened in his dream, he would immediately start the dream over, hoping to avoid having his father and all his friends know he had lied to them. The only good part of his fantasy was solving the puzzle and finding the treasure. He wasn't so sure there was any treasure. After all, Ed Upton had said that the Chinese gang had been destroyed and no gold was found. Maybe that was because there was no gold to find. Maybe the Cooper place had nothing to do with the Chinese thieves. But then there was Mr. Wong, the murdered Chinese man buried right beside the entrance to the tunnel in the shed. There was the buckle with the directions to something, and a clue to the location of the key. And then there was the tunnel with the barred gate at the end. Billy woke up. It was late morning. He got up and washed, ate breakfast, and got dressed, all of which he did while lost in thought. He pushed the tension of his dreams aside. He could not live with himself if he did not discover what was on the other side of the barred gate. To do that, he had to find a key, or an idea came to him. He was going to invite the gang for a sleepover. After all, it was Friday night. But what if he didn't? What if he slept in the fort by himself and used the darkness to cross the freeway? Crossing the freeway in daylight was almost impossible. Summer traffic was non-stop, and someone might see him. But before that, he would look for a key down in the tunnel. The barred gate was in the tunnel, so it only stood to reason that the key was hidden there, too. A plan was forming. He grabbed his LED flashlights and tested them, then stuffed the elastic headband that turned the flashlights into a geek light into his pocket and ran out the door. He headed to the boulevard where the Braves usually met. Jackie would not be there. He was grounded for another 7 days. He felt bad for Jackie. 2 weeks was a fifth of the summer. He rounded the corner and saw Petra, Orf, Maddox, and Charming tossing a frisbee back and forth. He was about to turn around. He wanted to avoid them. Sharma saw him and shouted, "William!" Everybody looked as he ran over to them. "Hi, guys," he said. "Spread out, you guys. Make room for Billy," said Maddox. Petra came over to him. She had a big smile on her face. "Where you been, Billy? I missed you." She touched him on the shoulder. Billy felt his face flush with embarrassment. He was not used to having girls like Petra tell the world she missed him. He quickly moved away to reach a place to catch the frisbee and shouted, "I had to work all week for my dad." The frisbee was tossed around the circle. Only Charming had problems. Every time he tried to toss it, it hit the ground a meter in front of him. Orf went to show him, and soon he was able to toss it as well as the rest of them. Billy's position was near the old maple. a toss from Maddox sailed over his head, and he ran to catch it. The frisbee landed in the maple tree. The whole gang ran over. They all automatically scanned the boulevard for witnesses. Keeping the secret passage to the Cooper property secret was ingrained in all of them. No one was in sight. Billy was about to climb the tree to fetch the frisbee when he heard voices from the other side of the 8-foot concrete fence. He stopped and held his finger up to shush the gang. They all listened. Billy immediately recognized Ed and Ming's voices. There was also the telltale hum of a metal detector. Billy gestured the gang to come in closer and whispered, "It's the people from the university, checking out the yard again. I'm going to climb up and have a look. You guys stay here." He carefully climbed the tree and peeked through the leaves. He could see a much larger machine sitting in the middle of the yard. Attached to it were scanning wands with small iPad-like screens attached. Both Ming and Ed were systematically covering the entire Cooper property. He heard Ming speak. She pointed at the screen on the top of her wand. "So this is the graph that shows if there are any hollows underground that are different in density to the surrounding areas. Yeah, if something were buried up to 2 meters deep, you would see a variation on that graph."
"You mean like another grave?"
"Yep. Or a cache of gold-filled brass animals."
"Oh, that's a fantasy. There's no treasure buried next to the freeway."
Probably not. "But let me know if you notice an underground hollow. I looked up the geology of this area. On the far side of the Cornborough Estates, the excavation crew found a cave system. They're all filled in now."
Billy froze. "They might find his tunnel. If he was going to solve the mystery before they did, he would have to act. He would have to act tonight."
"I have a seminar to lead this afternoon. You know what Professor Halverson would do if he walks into my seminar and I'm fumbling. I can fool the first years, but not him. Let's go. You can scan along the fence and behind the shed tomorrow. It's Saturday, and he gave you permission to scan it all."
"Yeah, okay. It's just that I was hoping to get it all done today."
"It's not going anywhere. You can look for your lost treasure tomorrow." She disconnected her scanning wand and headed to the white university van. Ed reluctantly followed, wheeling and scanning the device. They loaded the van and drove away. Billy shook a branch, and the frisbee dropped to the ground. He soon followed.
"Well, that ends my plans. I was planning to ask you guys if you wanted to have another sleepover in the fort, but the guys from the university will be here tomorrow."
"Maybe we can sleep over Saturday night," said Orff.
"I cannot," said Charming. "I have to attend my cousin's wedding. I am the bearer of the rings."
"Yuck," said Maddox.
"The food is plentiful and very, very good," said Charming.
"Well," said Billy, "maybe next Friday. Everyone keep the date open if you can." They all nodded.
Chapter 26. Searching for the Key. Billy headed home and packed his sleeping bag and other necessary camping gear into his knapsack. He wrote a note to his dad saying he would be home sometime on Saturday afternoon. Then he waited. It was critical that he did not meet any of his friends on his way to the maple tree. It was also important that he left before his dad came home. It was too soon to leave, so he waited and planned what he needed to do. After an hour, he figured that all his friends would have gone home, so he headed out. Avoiding the straight route, he stuck to the alleys behind the houses. Also, by moving from cover to cover, he avoided the streets that any of his friends lived on. Tucked behind a large mailbox unit, scanning the street, he hoped it would be empty. He saw no one. Unfortunately, he stepped out just as Mr. Kirk came out his front door. He was walking straight toward Billy. His stride was purposeful, and Billy thought he was staring straight at him. In fact, he was, but only because Billy was standing right in front of the mailbox. Mr. Kirk was carrying a mail key in his hand. Billy lowered his head and strode forward. Just as he passed Billy, Mr. Kirk said, "Hello, William." "Hello, Mr. Kirk," said Billy without stopping. They passed each other, and then Mr. Kirk turned and called back to Billy.
"Oh, William, I meant to call you about doing a little yard work."
Billy had worked for Mr. Kirk before, mowing lawns and such. "Any time, Mr. Kirk, just give me a call. I gotta go right now, sorry," said Billy, and he rushed off down the last alley before the boulevard. He looked both ways. Seeing no one, he rushed across to the maple tree. With one last look, he climbed the tree, crossed the branch, and dropped down on the shed roof. Billy had already decided that he was not going to sleep up in the tree fort. He was going to sleep in the shed. He did not want to be climbing to the fort in the dark. He went in the shed and removed his pack. While it was still light, he had to go into the house and get some bulbs to replace the one that had burned out. He would also get a spare. He retrieved the key to the back door and went inside. After finding the bulbs and setting them by the door, he picked up his dad's screw gun, removed the battery from the charger, and snapped it in. He tested the gun. It spun reassuringly in his hand. He lifted the trap door to the cellar and descended the ladder. After tightening the bulb, he pulled the dangling string, and the room filled with stark light. He pushed a box over to the shelf and removed the screw he had previously put into the shelf. He placed the screw gun in one of the cubbies on the shelf that did not move. Then he reached up and pulled the ring at the top of the cubby. The opposite shelf swung open. The air was still dank and musty, but the spiders hadn't had time to rebuild their webs. He pointed his flashlight into the cave and jumped down. Billy went straight down the tunnel. The Chinese lettering said block and three, so Billy figured he would look here. Bricks were blocks, right? The wall was made of bricks, so maybe one of them held the key, or at least a clue to where the key might be. He sat down in front of the brick wall that blocked off the tunnel. He scanned the bricks with his flashlight beam as he counted and tapped and listened and rubbed and pushed and pulled on any brick that could possibly be the third one, depending on how you counted. There was no key. He stood up and bumped his head on a slight protrusion in the ceiling. He turned while rubbing his head, climbed up onto the shelf, and pushed the shelf closed. He grabbed the screw gun and was about to replace the screw when he realized it was no longer necessary. So he jumped down with gun in hand. He turned to go up the ladder when he had another thought. Cubbies were blocks? Sort of, anyway. Maybe the key was hidden in one of them, and I missed it when I cleaned up. Billy searched the cubbies one by one, rubbing his hand over all the surfaces. There was nothing. Billy had another idea. Maybe he had put the key in the box that was to go to Mrs. Cooper. Maybe it didn't look like a key. Maybe he had already found it and hadn't even noticed. Maybe it was in the box upstairs. He quickly shut off the light, climbed the stairs into the kitchen, and closed the trap door. He went into the bedroom where he had put the box and searched through everything. There was nothing that looked like a key. He closed the box, replaced the screw gun, and put the battery back on the charger. He grabbed the two light bulbs beside the door and locked up. A few minutes later, he was heading back to the shed. The sky had turned grey. It was heavy with clouds. Billy knew that these clouds meant rain. He really hoped it would hold off. He didn't want his dad to get worried and come out looking for him. Once in the shed, Billy continued with the search for the elusive key. He plugged in the cord that powered his lighting string. He opened the trap door in the shed floor and lowered the ladder. He descended, put his geek light on, and headed up the tunnel toward the house. He was not going to leave any brick unturned, as it were. He soon came to a stop in front of the other side of the brick wall. He went straight to the pile of leftover bricks that were strewn on the ground. He looked each one over carefully, but found nothing. He inspected the brick wall from this side with the same intensity as he had in the cellar. There was nothing. Billy walked back down the tunnel. He picked up the replacement bulb and continued down the tunnel. It was brightly lit by his string of bulbs until he came to the burned-out one. He quickly replaced it and continued to the end. He was once again at the barred gate. He tried to reach through the bars to inspect the lock in the light of a 100-watt bulb. He could just touch it with his fingers. There was no way to even smash the lock from this side. He could see beyond the gate. There was what appeared to be a small cave. The ceiling was wet and dripping water from some newly formed stalagmites. He took out his flashlight and pointed the beam into the dark, where the bulb behind him did not illuminate. There were a number of small pockets along the floor of the cave. Beyond that, what appeared to be another small cave. He could see no further. If he wanted to search on the other side of the barred gate, he would have to cross the freeway, find an entrance, and climb inside. He considered the problem. There were a number of what-ifs. What if he could not find a way into the cave? What if there was no entrance? It could be totally blocked up. Billy did not want to consider that possibility. He suddenly came to the conclusion that the key must be on the other side of the gate, simply because the lock was on the other side of the gate. There would be no point in hiding a key on this side if you could not use it to open the lock. If it was anywhere, it had to be in that cave on the other side of the bars. He pointed his flashlight through the bars and scanned the cave again. He stopped in one of the small cave-like indentations near the floor. There was something inside. He leaned closer to the bars until his face was pressed against them in an effort to make out what was in this small hole in the wall. He noticed a right-angled shadow. His pulse fluttered. It might be a brick. It might hold the key. He shut off his flashlight and tucked it in his pocket just as a thunderclap rolled overhead. The vibration reached right down into the tunnel with an amplified bang. There was another larger rumble, and suddenly the lights went out. Billy was standing in total darkness. He realized that the dark clouds he had noticed earlier were now thunderheads. He turned toward a flash of light in the direction of the barred gate, when another thunderclap pounded down the tunnel. The lightning that preceded the thunder had lit up the darkness. Once again, the light flashed at the back of the cave on the far side of the gate, followed almost immediately by the thunder. Billy knew at once there must be an entrance.
The light from the lightning flash was evidence there was a hole. The size of the hole was still unknown, but it must be large enough to allow that much light into the cave. Chills ran up his spine and down his arms. He just had to check it out. He searched for his flashlight and turned it on just as the light string came back on. He ran down the tunnel. He did not want to be caught in the darkness again. Chapter 27. Captured. The string of lights flickered a couple of times before he reached the tunnel section under the shed. Once there, they went out completely. There was a power failure. Billy climbed up the ladder and pulled it up after him. He closed the trap door and sat down on his rolled sleeping bag. It wasn't late enough to try to cross the freeway. There were still too many cars. His head filled with fantasies of finding treasure, each one interrupted by reality. He had kept all this tunnel and treasure stuff secret from everyone, even his best friend and his dad. Was he being driven mad by his desire to find treasure? Did he have gold fever? He had learned about that in school when they did a unit on the gold rush in social studies. Maybe he had it. People with gold fever did crazy things for gold. Was he doing crazy things? What if he did find gold at the other end of the tunnel? What then? Would he tell everyone? If he did, they might take it all away from him. He might get his name in the paper, but he wouldn't get any gold. The government would take it. Billy lay back on the floor with his sleeping bag under his head. He stared at the ceiling. "Just a kid," he said out loud. And then he thought, "If I wasn't a kid, I might be able to take the gold, hide it, and find a place to melt it down into small ingots and sell them whenever I needed money." He suddenly sat up. He had a plan. He was going to hide any gold that he found and leave it there until he was old enough to melt it down and sell it. Then it wouldn't matter if he told everyone about the tunnel. He just needed to leave out the part about the gold. But where would he hide it? Ed Upton and Ming were bound to find the tunnel using the metal density scanner. If there was gold on the other side of the barred gate, he would have to find it and move it as soon as possible. Billy jumped to his feet. He checked his pockets for things he might need. He had a flashlight, the felt pen he used to mark the studs when he removed all the nails, and his small jackknife. He clipped the rock hammer to his belt and stepped out of the shed. It was dark. The power was out all over the glen. He walked toward the freeway. There was light over in the Cornborough Estates on the other side of the freeway. A power transformer probably blew out or was hit by lightning, killing the power on this side of the freeway. He looked skyward, and he could see some sheet lightning in the distance. The storm was heading west. He looked down at the freeway. There were cars on the other side, but nothing on his side. He trudged through the brush until he reached the edge of the road. He saw headlights approaching. He crouched down. A car passed. Darkness closed in. Billy took out a flashlight from his pouch and sprinted across the road, up an incline of loose rocks, and into the light brush on the other side. He stopped and was breathing hard. Not from the run, but from the excitement and fear he felt. All he needed to do now was to find the entrance to the tunnel. He headed for the rock tower in the middle of the median. He concealed himself in the trees and walked uphill to the north. His flashlight scanned the ground. Some large boulders came into view. Billy walked around them. He knew the light from the lightning bolt had entered the cave from somewhere. Somewhere very close to here. There was a pile of smaller rocks and then the beginning of the rock tower. Billy searched around the base of the tower.
At the eastmost point, the ground fell away. It was a pit with rocks all around the edge and fiddlehead ferns growing in the middle of it. Billy pointed his light down into the pit and jumped in. He found a small opening in the side of the pit, about a half a meter round. He crouched down and pointed his light into the hole. His heart was pounding in his chest. "This is it," he thought. All he could see was more darkness. He stuck his head in the hole and started to crawl down the passageway. He had gone about a meter when the passage opened up into a larger cavern. Billy scanned the cavern with his flashlight. His entire body shivered, and the goosebumps ran up and down his spine. Right in front of him was the gate of metal bars, and dangling from the gate was the biggest and oldest padlock Billy had ever seen. He was here. Now all he had to do was find the key to the lock. "Gate key block 3 rang out in his mind. He inspected the cavern, starting in the small rectangular alcoves on one side, where the cave wall met the floor. There were some bricks in the first one. They were the same kind of bricks that had been used to wall up the tunnel leading to the forge. He moved quickly to the bricks. There was a pile 3 bricks wide and 3 bricks high. The bricks touching the floor were almost disintegrated with water and age. The ones on top were still intact. Billy picked them up one at a time and inspected them. They were just old red clay bricks. Leftovers. Which one was brick 3? He thought. He dug into the shards of the bottom 3 bricks and found nothing. He tapped the others with his rock hammer and gave each a resounding thunk. He hit one of the bricks hard with the rock hammer. A large crack formed at an angle. He hit it again and it broke into 2 pieces. He held them up and inspected the broken faces. Nothing looked like a key. He sat back and ran his flashlight around the base of the cavern. He counted 4 rectangular openings at the base. The one that held the bricks was the largest, measuring about 40 centimeters square. The other 3 were increasingly smaller. Billy pointed his light at each of them in turn. The smallest one was about the size of one of the bricks. In fact, 1 brick would fit right inside of it. None of them were very deep. Billy crouched down and looked into the second hole. It was shallow and empty. He slid over to the 3rd hole that appeared to be deeper. He was about to reach inside when he heard the sound of a police siren gradually getting closer and closer. He froze, expecting the siren to pass by and disappear into the distance. It did not. It was suddenly very loud and very near. Billy pointed his flashlight into the hole he had used to enter the cavern. His first thought was that his dad had come to rescue him from the storm. He probably talked to one or more members of the gang and discovered the location of the fort. He would be wondering why he had gone to the fort by himself. Maybe he even called the cops. One of these were real cops looking for him. He crawled out of the tunnel, out of the hole, around the large boulders to the bushes 3 meters from the edge of the freeway. He tucked his LED flashlight into his pocket. Standing on the top of a slope of loose gravel, he could see the police car, and in front of it was a semi-truck with the name of a large electronic store chain on the side. The realization that these were the hijackers at work again made Billy freeze. This section of the freeway was the only place where there was room for a semi to pull over on the left. The hijackers could conceal themselves between the treed median on the left and the truck on the right. His skin
was growing cold. He watched through the thick brush as one of the men wearing a police uniform walked up the driver's side of the truck to the cab. Billy could not see clearly, but it appeared as if the policeman had ordered the driver to open the cab door. The fake cop climbed up to the cab, swung something at the driver, and climbed into the driver's seat. Billy realized there were two other men in the police car. Both wore dark coveralls and black toques. Billy watched as one of them got out and ran up the side of the truck. When he reached the cab, the fake policeman climbed down. Billy could just make out their conversation.
"Is he out?" asked the man wearing the toque. "Yeah, I hit him pretty hard. You can dump him. He won't be talking any time soon. I injected him with this," and he held up a needle that he slipped into a case.
"He saw your face. Are you sure we shouldn't make it perfectly sure?"
"I tell you, he won't remember a thing. Just dump him in the usual place and put this package in his pocket."
"What is it?"
"Insurance money and a little note. He'll wake up and not remember what happened to his truck. But he has $1,000 in his pocket that he cannot account for, and a note that recommends he don't even try to remember. Even if he tells the cops, it's doubtful they will ever connect it to us."
"Okay, I hope you know what you're doing. Just drive the truck to the warehouse and then dump the driver. That cannot be too difficult."
The hijacker nodded, climbed into the truck cab, and drove away. The fake cop walked back to the cop car. The other man was leaning on the hood of the car with his toque in his hands.
"Let's go. There's another truck due soon. We have to get ourselves set. There's a turnaround just past the curve. We can head north again about 4 clicks further. There's another turnaround. We'll wait there until the truck passes. Follow him and pull him over right here."
"Sounds good. This is a perfect spot. No one can see anything over there," he said, gesturing in the direction of the glen.
The fake cop opened the car door, and the other man slipped his toque on his head and walked to the passenger side. Billy leaned forward, trying to see inside the car. He wanted to know if it looked like a cop car inside as well as out. The loose gravel slipped out from under his feet. He fell on his bum and slid down the hill. He stopped practically at the fake cop's feet. He tried to get up, but the rocks moved under his feet and he could not hold his footing. He turned over, pushed himself to a standing position, and started to scramble up the slope. He got a half a step when he was lifted from the ground by the scruff of his neck.
"What do we have here?"
Billy was turned around in the air. He tried to get loose, kicking out with his feet and swinging his arms. The fake cop reached out with his other hand and slapped Billy hard across the face.
"A little spy." He turned to the other man. "Get the duct tape from the back seat."
"Let me go! Let me go!" screamed Billy.
The man hit him hard again on the side of his face. Billy felt his face stinging from the slap. He wanted to cry, but decided he would not give these criminals the satisfaction. The fake cop slammed Billy down on the trunk of the car and held him while the other man taped his hands and legs. The final piece of tape was wrapped tauntingly around his head, covering his mouth. Billy moaned. The cop inspected his work.
"What the hell are you doing out here at this time of night, anyway?"
Billy moaned again.
"Oh, that's right. You have tape over your mouth," he said, and laughed.
They opened the trunk of the car, dumped him inside, and covered him with an old smelly blanket. The trunk slammed closed, and the darkness was total, except for the bursts of light behind Billy's eyes that swelled and ebbed with the pain in his face.